time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
This is a national emergency.
Detonator charged.
We're in a race against the Nazis. And I know what it means. If the Nazis have a bomb.
We have a 12-month head start.
18.
How could you possibly know that?
We've got one hope.
All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here.
A secret laboratory. Keep everyone there until it's done.
Let's go recruit some scientists.
Build a town, build it fast. If we don't let scientists bring their families, we'll never get the best.
Why would we go to the middle of nowhere for who knows how long?
Why? Why? How about because this is the most important thing to ever happen in the history of the world?
You're the great improviser, but this, you can't do in your head.
Are we saying there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world?
Chances are near zero.
Near zero.
What do you want from theory alone?
Zero would be nice.
This is a matter of life and death. I can perform this miracle.
World War II would be over. Our boys would come home.
That's happening, isn't it?
The world will remember this day. Our work here will ensure a peace mankind has never seen.
Until somebody builds a bigger one.
You are the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves. And the world is not prepared.
Truman needs to know what's next.
Two. What's next?
One.
Thank you.
I might go because I'm actually coming in because I couldn't get back on my flight. So it's 105 and I'm currently in Sicily, hoping to fly back tomorrow via Berlin to Gatwick. But I have little doubt that that will go without a hitch. I'm in Sicily and the good old EasyJet, because there was a fire at the airport, have cancelled the flight. I'm having to fly via Berlin for 4-hour wait and then come back tomorrow, hopefully, if that works. It's 105. I'm having to stay in the hotel room. It's just appalling.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive special edition in which we discuss Sarah Huntley's challenges as she heads back from Greece to the British Isles. It's okay, we can cope with that. We're not going to edit it. We're going to run it live because that's what we do, because it's honest, the whole thing. Is it as honest as actually having two actors who are actually portraying Jewish people and they're not Jewish themselves? I'm speaking, of course, of Tom Conti as Albert Einstein. I'm speaking, of course, of the wondrous Cillian Murphy as indeed Oppenheimer. Big controversy in terms of, is that appropriate? Natasha Wanton, you've seen Oppenheimer in Australia. Not that he's been in Australia, obviously, but what are your thoughts on this particular movie before we find out what Richard Fitzwilliam's thoughts are?
Yes, so this was a really exciting one for me. Coming into it, having lived in Japan, having spent time in Hiroshima, I really wanted to see this movie. I've got a lot of interest in that sort of historical period of things. It was absolutely incredible. So for people who don't know, I'm sure Richard will give you a beautiful package synopsis in a minute, but just to quickly introduce it. So Oppenheimer is a biographical drama film, and it's directed by Chris Nolan, and it's loosely based on a biographical novel called American Prometheus, which is about kind of chronicles Robert Oppenheimer's life. Robert Oppenheimer obviously being the sort of man, the sort of face of the father of the atomic bomb, so to speak. And it was a very intriguing movie. It is 3 hours in length. I felt, though, that sometimes you sit in a movie and you're like, oh, this could have finished half an hour ago, could have wrapped it up. This one felt like it needed the 3 hours. I felt personally, I think that it needed to tell all of the story. I think that it was a really wonderfully cast film. I mean, you do have big names in here. You've got Matt Damon, you've got Cillian Murphy, you've got Emily Blunt, you've got Florence Pugh, you've got Rami Malek, you've got Kenneth Branagh. Like, there's big, big names in here. But it felt very, very real to me. It didn't feel like actors just play acting. It felt like these were the actual people and you were there and you were seeing into their lives, which was really, really well done. I will say that that going into this movie for the first sort of 30 minutes or so, I wasn't quite sure 100%, I wasn't fully following what was going on. And I think part of that is because the plot sort of moves around quite a lot chronologically. So Robert's story, so Oppenheimer's story, starts with him in 1926 when he's doing his postgraduate in the UK. However, it sort of hops back and forth between then and into later when we're seeing, well, I won't reveal what happens, but you're sort of later seeing him sort of testify about his life, and it sort of hops around to different points in it. That sort of settles down in the first 20 minutes or so, and then you start to see sort of a clear narrative. But it did take me a little while to sort of work out what was going on. But that didn't discourage my enjoyment of the movie. I think soundtrack-wise, it was very atmospheric, very haunting, very beautiful. I thought the music pieces were very well done. And visually, I mean, stunning. It's going to be, you think about like the bit when they drop the bomb and yeah, you know, you get the visuals. It's gorgeous. I don't think that's a spoiler, Richard. We know the bomb drops. I don't think that was a spoiler, but yeah, visually it's very beautiful, obviously very terrifying because you know the gravity of what they've done, but it's beautiful in a way, the way that they've done it visually, it's stunning. Yeah, there is a lot of tension, which you wouldn't expect there to be in this sort of biographical movie, but I feel like the tension was really well done. There were a couple of times where I was sort of gripping my husband's hand and there was a little bit of a heart race. No, I really, really enjoyed this movie. I think it's a movie that everyone should really go and see. It's very... It makes you think. It's quite heavy, but it makes the subject engaging. It allows people to engage in a way that's not off-putting. You know, you think of sort of molecular physics, you think it could be quite complex, but the way that they carry it off, it's interesting and it's sort of engaging and everyone can sort of engage with that material. I'm going to have to go for a 10, guys. I really, really love this movie and I don't give 10s lightly. My husband's also in agreement with the 10. It was just I think it's a very special kind of movie and I will be surprised. And I'm saying this now, so you got this on record. I will be surprised if it does not clean up at Oscars and Golden Globes because I think it was incredible.
High praise indeed, Natasha. Although I'm surprised, actually, Christopher Nolan, of course, doing a non-linear narrative. How bizarre! How would have expected that? Who would have expected that from a Christopher Nolan movie to actually have a non-linear narrative? I know you're a big fan of Tenet, Richard, and indeed lots of other things, including Dunkirk. But time for you to share your particular thoughts on this particular Academy Award-winning potentially opus.
No, but I totally agree regarding the Oscars and the Globes, because it is a remarkable movie. Now, regarding Christopher Nolan, I've got a sort of love-hate relationship with him, I have to say, because, yes, Dunkirk, I thought, was absolutely superb. Insomnia, indeed, a remarkable film. And yet, Tenet, as you were quirkily quipping, it did lose me, and the Prestige, I wasn't a great admirer of. And also Inception completely lost me. So with a Christopher Nolan film, there is a huge question mark, but equally regarding this one, its word of mouth was extraordinary because you had this terrific build-up, as you have to Barbie, both films being released on the same day, and both films... considering that Indiana Jones has not done well, a nod to Mission Impossible 7, but the facts are an awful lot rests on it. Now, this is a dramatic movie, and I totally agree with what Natasha was saying about the tension. It's like a thriller. What is so extraordinary is the way Nolan tells the story. In fact, what we're seeing are three stories told pretty well simultaneously. Firstly, with a bit of a backstory, the role that J. Robert Oppenheimer had in developing the bomb during the war. Secondly, the fact that he's answering questions from a committee regarding his security clearance and his supposed links with the Communist Party. And thirdly, which is a bit of a, we have to be careful about spoilers here, but Robert Downey Jr. plays Louis Strauss, who's expecting to be confirmed as a member of the American, of President Eisenhower's cabinet, and what happens there. Also, visually switching from black and white to colour, depending on which story. It's an audacious way of telling a story. It's also reliant on not only superb performances, but also a script which is informative, a script which adds to the drama, and a visual quality, because, yes, I'm still no expert on quantum physics. You certainly don't need to be, and yet a lot of the scenes, certainly in the earlier part, but throughout, deal with science in one form or another. And normally that might be a turn off for me. It certainly wasn't here. I mean, you've got an extraordinary way of telling the story, visually something amazing, but also obviously in a film of the sort, you're going to have the sound being particularly dramatic, especially when the bomb is tested. And also important that you don't actually see the bomb being dropped, but you do see a very telling, because Oppenheimer's relationship with, and this is the heart of the movie, the deeply complex figure, because Oppenheimer initially is compared to a mythological figure, Prometheus, who realized that humanity needed fire to survive. He defied the gods by giving fire to humanity and was punished to be tortured in eternity. This focuses on a deeply complex individual. Brilliant, undoubtedly, never won the Nobel Prize, but nonetheless, there's no question about his scientific brilliance, and especially since, although this is a bit exaggerated, as I checked, the Americans want the bomb before the Germans, it was never that close. But nonetheless, of course, the arguments as to whether or not the war with Japan, it was necessary to use it twice. Was it, in fact, to threaten the Russians? And indeed, this is another theme regarding the links with the Communist Party. Oppenheimer's wife, very unhappy, nonetheless, very feisty, played by Emily Blunt, very good performance. She was briefly a member of the Communist Party. His mistress, played by Florence Pugh, very sensitive, sad role, or sad past, sad history. Well, she is an ardent communist. And there's no question that Oppenheimer flirted with the Communist Party, but he wasn't a member. Equally, this is as part of the film, deals with the post-war hysteria against anyone who was linked with the Communist Party, which in any form, which leads to McCarthyism. So, rather like Prometheus, the emphasis is on the way Oppenheimer was treated after his absolutely phenomenal success. You could link it perhaps to Alan Turing here, who broke the German code and, of course, was crucified for being gay. There's a sense in which Oppenheimer is seen as a, or J. Robert Oppenheimer as a truly tragic hero. Visually extraordinary, sound, music, absolutely amazing. Fascinating as a sort of docudrama, as a thriller, and also in the ambiguity of it, because Oppenheimer loved being on the cover of Time and being lauded as the father of the bomb, and then things change, especially after his disastrous interview, which was a catastrophe with President Truman. But the gist of this movie is it's intellectually satisfying, it's ultimately thrilling. People are longing for an adult blockbuster, with all due respects to Mission Impossible 7 and Indiana Jones and so forth. This is it. The time of 180 minutes, I agree totally with Natasha that it didn't really feature. I mean, very often you'll get very impatient with a film of the sort in which is that long. And Cillian Murphy's performance, I mean, it's absolute perfection, because you've got a mixture of genius, of wayward ego, and you've got behaviour, which is undoubtedly eccentric. And it's a fascinating mix with a tortured sensibility. Very good performance indeed by Matt Damon as General Leslie Groves, is his military handler during the war. I mean, you wouldn't believe that he wasn't literally born into that role. Florence Pugh, very sensitive, as I mentioned. Emily Blunt, extremely good.
Richard, when you say born into the role, are you referring to Matt Damon's work as Jason Bourne, of course, who actually can channel a whole range of the Bourne supremacy to this?
I was referring to the fact that he's so at ease in a uniform, you can't believe he wasn't personally in the military. And so when you get that level of excellence, you've got to say that Christopher Nolan has had a huge success with this movie, and hopefully cinema will benefit.
Well, let's turn to somebody who experienced her first ever encounter with Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director, and indeed Richard Fitzwilliams, our regular film critic and royal correspondent. And Victoria went on to perform magnificently in a venue later on this evening. So well done, Victoria, and you've also made it to this particular side of things as well. As I said, the first time you encountered Sarah Huntley, Sarah turned to me afterwards and said, "She's okay, is Victoria?" We said, "Of course she is. That's why you've become part of the team." So on that basis, Natasha's giving you her review. Richard shared his thoughts of the whole thing. Is Oppenheimer something you're going to be checking out when you're back in France?
I want to, but I've made pros and cons list. Because obviously not seeing it, all I can go on is the clips, some of the reviews. I like the fact that they haven't used CGI. That for me is a huge thing.
And not real atom bombs either, thank the Lord.
Obviously. the tension already in the what I've seen, the character development seems to be amazing, and the music that I've listened to, I listened to quite a lot of it in the end, because it seems to be able to tell the short bit I did, it seems to be able to tell the whole story of what have I written down? Strong, intense, climatic, fearful, eerie, angelic. So it has all the story written into that music, which I really want to hear in its totality. And as you said, the amount of amazing actors in it really draws me to say, yes, this is something that's going to be an excellent production and I really want to see it. However, can it hold my attention for that 3 hours? That is something that worries me. And it is an intense subject matter. There's no doubt about that. So am I going to feel a little bit too much tension for me personally? And it's certainly not something I want to watch with my dad.
There we are. Sage words indeed, really. It's a sort of uncertain, undecided element from the perspective of will you be actually going to see it. We heard, of course, some of the music to introduce this sequence before we transversed into that whole notion of Sarah's agony in terms of returning from the hotbed of Sicily and so on via indeed Germany. But Sarah, back to your good self. What are your views on Oppenheimer? And again, that Newsweek article, which seems to have kind of eased off slightly, but there was initially controversy over the casting of Gentile actors as Jewish acting or Jewish people.
Well, I don't think that's an issue. I think that as long as somebody is faithful to the Jewish heritage of the actor, of the character they're playing, then I think that's fine. I am fascinated by this film, from everything you've all said. Also, I don't know, what I'm getting is very interesting from you all, that if I went to see this, I would understand why it all had to happen. Because I'm surprised that from it, no one's saying it was a bad mistake. I mean, that's sounds very trite. But I say that because I once did a poetry slam with Jessica Oppenheimer, who I think is Oppenheimer's niece. And I was just fascinated, but I never felt that I could mention this subject, because I think she I'm not saying, I don't want to say put words into her mouth, but I think she was very aware.
Sensitive, perhaps. Yeah.
Yes. So my question would be to you all that have seen it is, do you come away from it understanding why it happened and why it was developed? Or does the film not really, I mean, we're talking about a bomb that killed thousands
millions.
Of people. So, millions. So does it deal with that in the sense of, should that have happened? That's what I would have said.
It does, but this is, I did mention the ambiguous attitude towards it of Oppenheimer, but also I'm just going to the politics a bit more. I mean, what you see is the fact that Oppenheimer, to begin with, thought that it was a good idea to unleash it against Japan, because the horror of it would deter all wars of the future. One of the reasons he falls out with the American establishment is his antipathy to nuclear proliferation. The knowledge that Russia will get the bomb inevitably, although some dispute it, leads to the arms race. And he sees that as a possible trigger for Armageddon. And yes, Tom Conti playing Einstein, it is an interesting conversation between both of them, which is revealed. It's one of these films where there's a terrifying ambiguity at the heart of this, because on the one hand, he's been responsible for developing a supreme weapon of mass destruction, the like of which is so terrifying. And indeed, in some of the visuals, there's, as Yeats would say, a terrible beauty in the way that we see the bomb being tested silently, and then suddenly you will find that, shall we say, Nolan uses his sound like a piano player. It's very impressive. But so the politics of all this is absolutely at its heart. And the ambiguous moral dilemma, the fact that there was a race, as I mentioned, with Germany, actually, the film does elaborate a little too much on that, because Germany was never, Hitler persecuted Jewish scientists, but also there was no real giant German race as such, especially once heavy water had been destroyed in Norway. The problem here, though, as it's shown, is that there is this race. Clearly, the Americans must get the bomb before the Germans. When that happens and Germany surrenders, then you've got the question mark as to what to deal or how to deal with Japan, where in reality they were on the brink of surrender. And we know this. Also, there's the idea, though the film doesn't go into it in depth, that the reason the atomic bomb really was used wasn't just to save numerous lives, which would have undoubtedly, there would have been catastrophes if there'd been an American invasion, but to flag up a warning to the Russians, because it was abundantly clear by then that there was this Cold War was going to set in after the Second World War. So there are a whole variety of reasons, and you could argue both sides, because there's also the argument that the balance of terror was kept during the Cold War. The fact that there was no massive war between America and its allies and Russia, or the then Soviet Union, because of the existence of the bomb. Equally, there is another dimension which the film does explore, but not in great depth. And that is that there's a British scientist working in the test of Los Alamos in New Mexico called Fuchs. And Fuchs was actually a spy for the Russians. It's abundantly clear someone is passing information to the Russians, and it's also clear that the Russians are going to get the bomb. Who it is, the fact that Oppenheimer is suspected, and the fact that he also doesn't repeat a pivotal conversation with a communist colleague, this again adds up to the case against him, which of course was largely fabricated, but not entirely. So the ambiguities and the actual facts around all this and the different themes and the military arguments and the ethical dimension. It's one of the fascinating aspects of this 3 hours. It's all gone into in quite a lot of depth.
Well, music by Ludwig Göransson. And Sarah?
Richard, a question. Do they tackle the fact that Oppenheimer's Jewishness would have, having had the Holocaust happen? Does that figure in what's decided in how he works with everybody, or is that just not the issue at this point? I mean, like, you know, you say the Holocaust should never, ever, please God, ever happen again, but the same with Hiroshima. I'm just intrigued how they...
Sarah, tragically, if you look at Rwanda, if you look at Serbia, if you look at Croatia, you'll find that elements of the Holocaust have happened again and again. And that's to our own humanity's disgrace, basically. I think you also find, Richard will probably sort of have his own views on this, but in terms of the actual movie itself, the actual true atrocity of the Holocaust was not known when the atomic bomb was being developed at that stage. It was literally a case of setting the scientists together and actually putting things working on Einstein's E equals MC squared equations to obviously develop that further and to ensure that the power of the bomb was actually put into place. The reason why it was put into operation, not once but twice, because they could do it and because it basically sort of doubled down on the whole aspect. And it's one of the areas now we kind of see almost being echoed with respect to the thoughts of Vladimir Putin, also saying maybe we should actually pop the bomb into place. And indeed, there are, of course, other people who would actually say, yes, it's time we actually had a nuke. It's 75 years since the last time, but so it goes. Perhaps we just need to pray. Richard, we move on from there to an even more explosive number. If you actually talk about the battle of the isotopes and indeed the acceleration of that in terms of the world of Ken and the world of Barbie, because clearly this is probably potentially even more rigorously gripping in terms of its pinkness alone for the human race as we sit today.
Well, may I first say that some people, indeed Greta Gerwig herself, who directed and co-wrote Barbie, actually had this weird idea of seeing Barbie and Oppenheimer together. May I urge everyone not to do any such thing? It really would be absolutely crazy. You've got two completely different movies. And I've just read someone in one of the papers who did and greatly regretted it, because they are very different and need to be appreciated in a different way. I mean, if you look back over the years, I seem to remember Aqua had a song, Hello Barbie, Let's Go Party. Well, if you're going to party with Margot Robbie, make absolutely certain that you realize it's going to be on her terms, because she is one of the reasons that this film is such a joy. She is Barbie. She's got an ice cold allure in Barbie land. Barbie land that we meet originally is, well, this is in fact ruled by Barbies. They're all Barbies, of course, dolls indeed, as we discovered.
Surely there's got to be an atomic scientist Barbie, and a warmonger Barbie, and a political conspirator called Barbie.
Alex, Barbie land is perfection. It is, has, in fact, a few beach hangers-on who are all Kens, and the women are all Barbies, and, well, they control everything. All seems fine, and they believe in the real world that it's something like that. They know they're not in the real world. There's Weird Barbie, who has strange experiences, and Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon, in fact instructs Barbie, played by Margot Robbie, of course, that she has to find her counterpart, her real-life counterpart in the real world. She's got to
it's
go...
It's like Enchanted, all over again, but with worse music.
Well, I do have to say that when she drives to out of the pink wonderland of Barbie, all the sets, all the colours, all the rest of it, this film is visually fabulous, and it's one of the aspects of it that everyone will remember, and pink most particularly. She discovers that Ken, played by Ryan Gosling, and indeed someone drawn irresistibly to Barbie, but she regards him as totally inadequate, and he certainly puts the eye in inadequate for this sort of party, for this sort of part. But he hitches a lift with her, so she's got no choice but to take him to California, where she's going to discover the truth of the universe, as where Barbie puts it. What does he discover in California? He discovers that it's a patriarchy, not what the Barbies believe. So he manages to sneak back to Barbie land whilst we're finding that in California, Barbie is discovering a lot of problems. She's discovering that she and the Kens are products of a patriarchal, in fact, it's a monstrous all-male cartel at Mattel. And at Mattel, they're horrified. Two dolls have escaped, a Ken doll and a Barbie doll, especially problems with the Barbie doll. So they've got led by Will Ferrell, who plays the chief executive officer, have got to track down these dolls. What happens when, chased by the executives, Barbie returns? Well, there's a real problem, because Ken's got there before her, and it's all very, very different. Now, this is a movie, firstly, to enjoy visually. Secondly, of course, for Margot Robbie. Yes, 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 visually fabulous. And there's also a very nice climactic touch, which we won't dwell on, which is a homage to Barbie and the way Barbie was created. It is too long, and, well, if you want an attack on inequality, this, in fact, it's quite thought-provoking in a way. It's darker than I think a lot of people thought or expected. And the musical numbers, lively, a few of them, would have liked some more. But it's a feminist movie, and when it hits its target, it can make you feel quite uncomfortable. So owners of Barbie everywhere taking control of their own lives. They've got to control the Kens as well. But it's the pink that's going to be the colour of the summer. Let's just hope these two movies can lift cinema, because it has, since COVID particularly, a lot of this was coming from streaming, and with an actors and writers strike on in Hollywood, there are great difficulties. Barbie will please the fans, that's the point.
The listener will have heard last night, I was there on the radio, possibly last week if you're a podcast subscriber, that Graham Harper and myself were both Action Man people, which is fine. I mean, sorry, I agree with that. Richard, no surprise, preferred tiny miniature soldiers in South Africa. Probably the manipulative sort of side of things coming across there. However, enough of such stuff. Victoria, Barbie, one for your good self? Or is it a case of, I don't know, I mean, let's do happy is surely the best grammatically phrased single you could ever have, as opposed to, you know, let's get happy and so on?
Yeah, it suits Barbie, but I definitely want to see Barbie. It's, everybody complains that Barbie will be maybe pro women and girls thinking certain things, boys thinking certain things, and have doubts about that. But I had lots of different Barbies. I had the standard Barbie, I had a Baywatch Barbie, and I remember my Baywatch Barbie. I wanted to be like her because she was, it was all about expression for women and showing me that I could be something more. So interacting with both of this human and Barbie side, I really want to see. But and it's about the impact on the society at the time, which of course I can relate to. And I'd like to quote, humans have one ending, but ideas live forever. And the fact that it has that effect on your society and children, you want to see that.
Sarah, did you have an actress Barbie when you were a child?
I had a Cindy.
Mm. Yeah.
That dates me even more. I think the difference between Cindy and Barbie for me was,
one was American, one was British.
Well, yes, that's what I was going to say. So I think that's fascinating what Richard's saying about it. I mean, it does have quite a dark side to it, actually.
It's misandry as opposed to misogyny, one of those two things, clearly.
well, and that they escape. And is it? Mm. I want to see this. I'm very sorry I missed going to see this with Richard. I think what I'm getting
you
from
can
it
go
is
again. What, I mean, repeat viewings. There's always that possibility.
But I mean that thing about is it escaping from perfection? You know, is it that we don't all have to live up to what we think we should look like and be like? I think you're getting that a bit from it as well. That and are you really happy in perfection land?
Well, Natasha, so. You are in perfection land. Obviously, you've got the World Cup that's going on there. You're in Australia. You're certainly by far in the most significant sort of part of the globe from that point of view, even better than France, some might say. Natasha, any thoughts on yourself? Is Barbie one for you? Or is it a case of, look, if you actually had the original dimensions of Barbie, you would physically fall over. Gravity would not enable you to actually have those particular dimensions and work.
Oh, gravity. I'd like to echo firstly what Richard said. Maybe don't go see these two back to back. I left Oppenheimer and there was like just this haunted kind of heavy feeling in my chest. And I'm not sure I'd want to sit through Barbie after that. But you do you. If that floats your boat, do it. Secondly, Richard, you'll be very happy to know that it's absolutely heaving in the cinemas here. Barbie each day this weekend has had 15 viewings, and every one of them you
is that
get
because
a
the Australians thought they were going to see an outdoor barbecue and cooking beef and such thing.
It's gone Barbie mania here. Everything is pink. The whole high streets are pink. All the foods are serving pink food everywhere, pink mayonnaise. It's all gone Barbie crazy. So it's been a massive smash down.
Watch
under.
Out for the charcoal. It can cause global warming.
Yeah, there's enough of that going on at the minute. Anyway, no, I do want to see this movie. I think as I Richard kind of confirmed suspicions that I think it was going to be a lot darker than the sort of fluffiness sort of the trailer sort of hinted at. So I like this sort of satirical route it's kind of taking, and I'm interested to see where it goes. So I will be definitely checking this one out.
But with worse just music than Enchanted.
If I may, also the narrator is Helen Mirren, who does a most amusing job. And on one occasion, she breaks the fourth wall and has a crack at Margot Robbie, which is very, very funny. I mean, it isn't a scintilla of a second does this movie take itself too seriously, except when it does. So, you know, you'll be able to work that out when you see it. Also, a mention of Gloria, played by America Ferrera, and Sasha, a Barbie skeptic, but nonetheless, she joins in when there's a war between the sexes to be fought by Ariana Greenblatt, who's pretty big in Hollywood. Quite a movie, and I'm delighted, Natasha, that you know that it's taking off like that, because that is what's necessary. My own personal preference might be for Greta Gerwig's mumblecore satires like Frances Ha, American, Mistress America, and Lady Bird, but that's a different matter.
There was a time at the start of this particular piece when I honestly thought we just have to hand the entire thing over to the agonies of Sarah Huntley trying to get back home from Sicily. But thankfully, we managed to put that to rights and did in the end get both reviews all nicely put together and tucked into place. So to Sarah Huntley, to Natasha Wanton, get back soon, Sarah, to Victoria Simmons, and of course to Richard Fitzwilliams, many thanks indeed. And before we head into more Barbie music, keep watching the movies.
Hey, Barbie. Can I come to your house tonight?
Sure. I don't have anything big planned, just a giant blowout party with all the Barbies and planned choreography and a bespoke song. You should stop by.
So cool. You can find me under the
lights, diamonds under my eyes. This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever. So is yesterday, and so is tomorrow, and every day from now until forever. Do you guys ever think about dying?
When my heart breaks.
Some things have been happening that might be related. When my world shakes. Cold shower. Ooh. Falling off my roof. Ah! And my heels are on the ground. To do.
You have to go to the real world.
You can go back to your regular life, or you can know the truth about the universe. The choice is now yours.
The first one, the high heel.
You have to want to know, okay? Do it again. Closer, I am fine.
Closer, I am fine. I'm coming with you.
Okay.
Wow, this is the real world. What's going on? Why are these men looking at me?
Yeah, they're also staring at me.
Barbie in the real world. That's impossible.
If this got out, this could mean extremely weird things for our world.
This would be catastrophic!
We haven't played with Barbie since we were like 5 years old.
Oh.
No one rests until this doll is back in a box. Even if nobody else sings
along. Humans only have one ending.
Get that Barbie!
Ideas live forever.
No, I won't let you do just one appendectomy.
But I'm a man.
But not a doctor.
Can I talk to a doctor?
You are talking to a doctor.
And I need a clicky pen?
No.
A sharp thing?
No.
There he is. Doctor!
Somebody get security.
Is Barbie bitch if you still in doubt?
Don't see why I laugh at that.
the Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment. When I close my eyes, it's a fantasy. Perfect plastic life from a magazine. Then when I wake up, it's reality. I can have it.
You
Bye.